This week on Hyperspace Broadcasts, a giant robot is friendly for a change. Imagine that. Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Hyperspace Broadcasts, a show where two real friends dig through Toonami's back catalog and try to determine what's worth revisiting. I'm Michael Doak.
I'm Peter Eby.
And this week we're covering the 1999 film The Iron Giant, a modern classic of animation, if you will, widely considered to be very good and quite a tearjerker. What did we think? Oh, yeah. That's coming up. Right after this break. Anyway.
What?
I don't know.
We doing an early break?
You just break right after the intro from now on.
I like that. Yeah, that's like when they have a cold open to a show and then the show opener and then it's a commercial break. It's
yeah,
the biggest
yeah,
tease in the world.
Stuff's awesome. All right. So The Iron Giant's based on a 1968 children's book called The Iron Man. It was called The Iron Giant in the U.S. to avoid confusion with Iron Man, the Marvel character. So that's like, you know, just like Tetsujin 28.
Yeah.
You know, Iron Man was making things confusing for everyone back in the day. This book is written by Ted Hughes for his children in the wake of the death of his wife, Sylvia Plath. Pete Townsend wrote a concept album called The Iron Man, a Musical, which kind of boggles my mind. And in 1991, Richard Basley pitched a version based on the concept album to Don Bluth, who passed on the project. Eventually, it made its way to Warner Brothers, and it was given to Brad Bird. So the musical angle was dropped.
Thank God. I I'm not the biggest musical fan in the world. I've seen them where they work and they can be great. I can't imagine this is a musical.
Yeah, right. No, I mean, that's the thing. Like, I guess I should listen to the concept album, maybe.
Oh, it's like a rock opera?
That'd yeah, be kind of dope. Yeah. Cause that would work probably. But at any rate, apparently Pete Townsend's response to the musical thing being dropped was, well, whatever, I got paid, which is the greatest response to anything. yeah. And so the film began to kind of more take shape as to what it would eventually be under the direction of Brad Bird and the script by Tim McCanley's. But Warner Brothers was aching because they had just released the movie Quest for Camelot, which was an animated movie that was a pretty bad financial failure. So they basically gave The Iron Giant no budget, a very strict schedule, and then they did almost no, like, you know, tie-in merchandising or any of the kind of stuff that you usually do for an animated movie so that people know it's going to come out. As a result, it was a massive flop, even more than Quest for Camelot. But unlike Quest for Camelot, it got, it became a cult classic because it's fucking great.
Yeah, not to mention fucking Cartoon Network did multiple 24-hour marathons of The Iron Giant. Somebody at Cartoon Network really loved that movie.
Yeah, that is. And I mean, like we were saying last time we talked about Iron Giant at all, like that just baffles me as a decision. This is not a movie that you can just kind of like dip in and out of, like A Christmas Story or like the Rudolph stop motion stuff. Like,
I feel like you kind of could, though. Like, you just jump in at any time and you're like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, the end with all its emotional weight, you're just like, oh, okay, this is a scene.
That's true. It isn't like The Christmas Story where there's like hardly an arc at all.
Right. So what happens in this movie? Well, in 1957, just after the launch of Sputnik, a meteor crashes down off the coast of Rockwell, Maine, and a fisherman who sees it come down in a storm basically crashes his boat into this huge metal monster. So the next day he is talking about this at a diner we're introduced to our main character, Hogarth Hughes, who is a kid whose mother, Annie, works at the diner. Basically, this old fisherman is telling the folks about this giant monster, and they're all making fun of him. And,
so like, like a scene out of the Perfect Storm. I almost said Perfect Strangers. That would be very different.
Yeah, it's also kind of worth mentioning. One thing about this movie that surprised me a little bit for some reason is that there's like some mild cursing. And in this scene, the townsfolk that are, you know, being told this story laugh it off specifically, you know, by intimating that this old fisherman was probably just really, really drunk.
Yeah.
So that, you know, it's always a little weird to go back to watch movies that you saw as a kid and see stuff like that. And you're just like, whoa, I totally, like, that fucking went over my head.
Normal to me.
I guess.
It's
I mean,
like, there's always like casual cursing, like a hell and a damn, or possibly, yeah, possibly a shit.
Yeah, right. I mean, I remember like watching Star Wars as an adult and being surprised at the amount of damns in there.
Yeah.
Or hell, even. But we're getting off track.
Which is confusing that hell is a thing that exists in Star Wars.
Yeah, right, of course. Yes, I was going to make that point, and then I was like, we're getting off track already.
It's true.
Maybe hell is a planet.
Yeah.
Yes. So
hell 7.
So we meet Dean, who is basically one the other like major character in this story, who's a beatnik and a junkyard owner. He sticks up for the fishermen and basically, you know, teaches Hogarth like, oh, you got to stick up for the people being made fun of. So that night, Annie has to work late. Hogarth watches a very cheesy, like, science fiction horror movie, and the reception fails. He goes up to the roof to find that the antenna has been destroyed and sets off into the woods after, like, basically a trail of destruction through the woods. Clearly something very large has been moving through.
And he thinks, I think he assumes it's some kind of communist.
Yeah, right. He assumes it's some kind of like space monster or whatever. I mean, he's a kid in the 50s. Like, I mean,
right. He had a Red Menace comic book, you know.
Yeah, right. And I mean, frankly, if I just like one day looked out my window and there were a bunch of buildings just ripped apart in a path, I would probably think it was some kind of monster. Like,
yeah, sure.
It's fairly unusual. But anyway. He goes out into the woods and he finds the titular Iron Giant, who is a big robot who eats metal. He attempts to eat a power station and gets caught up in some power lines and is getting all electrocuted. And Hogarth saves him by throwing the big off switch so the giant can escape, basically.
And a little message pops up in the corner that says, the Iron Giant will remember this. As we see later when he comes back and starts trying to feed the Iron Giant metal, as mysterious chunks of metal are being bitten out of objects around town and the townspeople are starting to notice.
Yeah, and the fisherman was, you know, suggesting that he had called the government in order to have them send somebody to investigate. And so we get Government Inspector Kent Mansley, who is a like kind of severe, very paranoid man who basically discovers that Hogarth has some relation to this big monster that eats his car at one point. So, you know, he's investigating
stuff. He works for the Bureau of Unexplained Phenomenon.
Yes, right. And there's a point where the Iron Giant starts eating some rails of a train track and is trying to like fix it before the train, you know, comes back and derails. But the train hits him and basically totally wrecks him. Fortunately, the Iron Giant can self-repair because it's made of DG cells, I assume.
oh no. And... that's such a much darker version of the story. Of course it's DG cells.
Yeah, right. You know, so it's one of the three
dark Gundam.
It's one of the three theoretical abilities, self-repair, self-evolving, and whatever the other one was.
But it's sent to help the world, but it's sent to destroy the world, but it's like the opposite of the Dark Gundam.
Yeah, exactly. It's reverse Dark Gundam.
And he hit his head, and now he's going to help the world.
And at no point does he merge with an entire space colony, but, you know, there's always hope for a sequel. So the giant demonstrates an ability to self-repair. Hogarth stashes him in his barn, and then Kent Mensley comes knocking because it's the nearest phone. Unfortunately for Hogarth, his mother is renting out a room. So Kent, after realizing that a BB gun that Hogarth like left at the power station when he was fleeing from the giant, he realizes that Hogarth has some relation to this monster and decides to rent the room, and then basically spends all of his time following this boy around, trying to, you know, figure out what he's up to.
Yeah. I love the character of Detective Kent.
Yeah. Kent's great. There's a really great, like, kind of montage scene where he just keeps referring to Hogarth as all these, like, you know, like buddy and, yeah, and hey, Ace Skipper. And stuff.
Yeah,
and it goes like super on for, rapid
as he's constantly really trying to bother him for questions.
Yeah, so basically, since now the house is probably not a great place to store the giant, Hogarth moves it to Gene's Dunkyard. Yes.
Gene's Dunkyard? That's the basketball hoop, right?
Yeah, right.
It's constantly fucking hitting the paint.
So anyway, Hogarth moves the giant to Dean's junkyard, where basically has all the metal that he can eat, and Dean basically is just like, fine, I guess you can keep him here. It's also revealed that Dean is an artist making sculptures out of scrap metal, but no one wants to buy him. So, you know, we have more stuff with Hogarth and the giant. Hogarth exposes him to Superman via the classic action comics. And also has to explain the concept of death and a soul, because there's a little bit where they meet a deer and then the deer runs off and is immediately shot by some hunters. And the giant, you know, has to be told what death is, essentially.
Yeah. And he sees a gun and almost freaks out.
Yeah, that's true. I forgot about that little
his like bit. Eyes start to turn red when he sees the gun and it gets all obsessive and stuff, and then he kind of like blinks and refocuses.
Yeah. So after finding a photo that Hogarth like basically accidentally took of the giant, Kent calls in the military, and they're initially fooled by a ploy that basically is just disguising the giant as one of Dean's art projects. So they seem to get away with it, but Hogarth, while playing with the giant, points one of those, like, you know, toy, like, laser gun things at it, and it activates a self-defense system that's basically laser eyes.
Yeah.
And Dean, you know, basically just Harry and the Hendersons it and tells the giant to go away because he's basically a giant gun. You know, he's made to destroy stuff. He does later realize that the giant was acting in self-defense, but now the giant's just kind of walking away, and the military spots it, and they start fighting it. We learn that the giant can fly. It is attacked by some jets, and the giant shot down, crashes into the ground, and Hogarth seems to be dead. So the giant goes, you know, full killbot mode, and starts just blowing the crap out of pretty much all of the military stuff.
Clearly the part that I had remembered the most as a kid, of course, is when the robot turns all badass and starts shooting lasers at everyone.
That's interesting. I yeah, I actually didn't remember that part very very distinctly.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
The it's pretty funny too, because like I love that in all of these movies, do you think in real life tank operators are trained to immediately evacuate their tank when they see a robot slowly charging a laser weapon at them?
You know, maybe.
I feel like in every giant monster thing, they're like, oh, shit, we gotta get out.
Yeah, I can be a little more accepting of that in this case, just because, you know, the Iron Giant, who is like this lovable big monster, just straight up killing a bunch of people like even implicitly is a little weird. So yeah, you know, we have the classic kind of G.I. Joe, don't worry, parachutes, they're okay. except handled with about 1,000 times more grace and, you know.
Yeah, exactly. It's not... Yeah, they just bail out of it immediately, and then it gets zapped into oblivion, and it's pretty cool.
Yeah, right. So basically, conventional weapons are useless against the giant, and Ken says, well, there is one weapon that we can use, the bomb. There is a nuclear submarine off the coast, and it prepares a nuke to launch at the giant. Kent says they can lure it somewhere unpopulated so that they can hit it and not do any collateral damage. But after Dean basically tells the general that the giants only act in self-defense, and if they stop attacking it, it won't do anything, Kent flips out, grabs the walkie-talkie, and orders the firing of a nuclear missile, which,
yeah,
you know, is going to come down right in the middle of the city, which he is also in.
And the general, voiced by Christopher voiced by Henry Connick Jr. Sorry. No, dumbass. Restart this whole shot. Restart the whole show. I did three wrong right. actors.
3, 2, 1. Hey, everyone. Welcome to Hyperspace.
Fuck. Oh, no. What have I done? The general's great. Like, he's always constantly tearing Kent Mansley's ass. Like, just like, especially when he orders a nuke on top of them, like, as you would expect.
Yeah, he's,
in, like, a perfect, like, complete decimation, like, Arlie Ermy kind of, like, military takedown of just, like, you fucking idiot, you just ordered that on top of us, and he's, like, tries to flee, and he's, like, no, you're gonna stay here like a good soldier. I like that, too. When Kent Mansley realized what he did, he jumps into a Jeep and tries to speed off, and the Iron Giant, who's totally level-headed at this point, is like, uh-uh, no.
Yeah, just you fucker, you're gonna die with us. Yeah, puts his hand down, and the car just crashes right into it. Yeah, so there's a nuke coming to hit the city. The Iron Giant can fly, and it flies off. It remembers what Hogarth told him earlier, which is something that Dean actually told Hogarth much earlier, which is that you get to choose who you want to be. The Iron Giant says to itself, Superman, and then, you know, intercepts the nuke, which explodes in the upper atmosphere, saving the city. We cut forward in time to... Did they even say how much further in time it is, actually?
No.
Okay, it's...
You know, you can imply, like... a couple months. It seems like it's just like the end of summer because they're at school.
Yeah, right. That's true. And it's clearly late fall, early winter throughout the rest of the movie. So I guess I should have
long enough to build a statue of the good old Iron G.
Yeah, I guess I should have relied on context clues instead of expecting it to tell me several months later. So Hogarth is, of course, devastated by the loss of the giant. The general sends him a package with the only piece of the giant that was recovered, which is a screw. And then one night he hears the screw kind of rattling around in the box, remembers that the giant can self-repair, and lets the screw go off to find the giant, which is in Iceland. And it's all the parts are coming together towards the head to be reassembled. And the last shot of the movie is the eyes of the giant waking up.
Yeah, so we get him back. There's nothing to cry about.
Yeah, no, he's fine. Don't worry about it. All right, so that is the story of the Iron Giant. We're going to go to our break for real this time. And when we come back, we will talk about what we thought about this movie and then what we're going to watch next.
It's bad to kill, but it's not bad to die. Yeah. Well, yeah, someday. I don't know.
The Iron Giant will return in a moment. Hey everyone, it's Michael, here to do what I do during the breaks, which is tell you a bunch of information you might already know or have intuited. Anyway, here we go. Our opening and closing music is, as always, Vapor Dive In, and the music for the bumpers is Monkeys. Both are by Onatech. You can find more of their music on SoundCloud. Rights were secured through Jamendo. Our next full episode will release August 14th, and next week catch a mini-sode where we discuss The Black Cauldron. As always, you can submit a topic or show suggestion for our minisodes via DM on facebook.com/HBpod, Twitter at HBpod, or you can email us at hyperspacebroadcastpod@gmail.com.
You mean national security?
Let's put it this way. Every once in a while, things happen that just can't be rationalized in a conventional way. People want to know that their government has a response. I am that response.
And now, back to the Iron Giant. All right, we're back. Peter, what did you think about this movie?
I loved it. It's like seeing it again. It's probably been like almost 2 decades since I've seen this movie.
Yeah, no, probably since its release. I mean, I certainly saw it in theaters.
I don't think I saw it in theaters. I definitely saw it in one of Toonami's many marathons.
Yeah, I don't think I ever saw it in one of the marathons, but it has been 20 years since it was released, so certainly possible.
What a delight, though. Like, throughout this whole film, like, the animation looks fantastic. You said they're on a budget. I wouldn't have guessed, honestly.
Yeah, right. Like, I know. Like,
it's really just masterful throughout. And even, like, I mean, to be fair, I was watching the Signature Edition, which is like a 2015 kind of, I don't know if they retouched it a little bit. They added some more scene or extended some scenes.
Originally planned,
but not in it.
I would be very surprised if they like retouched the whole film. Like, you know, you'd pretty much have to reanimate the whole damn thing.
But I wonder if they did like
better, but
touch up the CG animation or something.
Maybe.
Because at first I was like a little concerned. I was like, oh, that robot, I don't know. And then not in terms of how it looks so much as how it moves.
Sure.
But also it's a robot, so it's like, who cares? But even a robot looking too robotic in CG can be bad. But it quickly got over that, and it was fine.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I really enjoyed this movie. I think it definitely deserves the reputation it has. One of the things that I actually really like about it is that it feels very, like, naturalistic in a way that I wasn't really expecting. There's something about the performance and the animation and just, like, the writing of it that it doesn't feel... Like, it feels like it could be live action without changing a whole lot in a way that's really cool. And to be fair, we did just finish watching G Gundam, which is, like, the exact opposite.
Not naturalistic whatsoever.
not quite.
Are you telling me people don't normally say this hand of mine is burning red?
Yeah, they don't scream
it's
that
loud
at the top of their
lungs.
Tells
me to defeat you.
Right. So there is a possibility that it seems naturalistic in comparison to that, but there's something I really like about that aspect of this. Another thing that kind of ties in with that is that, like, just the design of Hogarth in particular is so good. Like,
yeah,
he looks like a kid, and I don't know, like, for some reason, I guess I have this expectation that all animated stuff, like, everyone looks super great, but, like, there's something about the detail of Hogarth clearly having, like, slightly crooked teeth that I was really impressed by. I don't know.
His design seems like iconic enough that it could pass that Simpsons test, you know, where it's like you can identify the
silhouette, the basically.
Yeah, by their silhouettes.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. And in general, like, everything else about it, the animation looks really good, especially considering that apparently their budget was not super high. From what I've read, partly that was due to Brad Bird having like a very, very high level of creative control and control in general over like each step of the process. So that might have helped. It's also maybe worth mentioning that they used Adobe After Effects in this, and it's like one of the first times that that program was used in an animated thing, which is kind of crazy to me because that seems to be what a lot of stuff is done in now. And, you know, I could go on about the usual stuff. I think the message is pretty nice. I'm a sucker for science fiction that's about understanding. That's something that always gets me. One thing that is, you know, this is not a hot take, certainly, but Vin Diesel is really good in this movie. I mean, he is the giant, like... it boggles my mind somewhat that Vin Diesel in this, and then also in Guardians of the Galaxy in his performance as Groot, like, he can take characters that have almost no lines, or like very simple lines, or just the same line over and over again, and put so much emotional weight into it. Like, that's really impressive and crazy, because, you know, his live action performances, I would not say necessarily indicate that ability. Like, this might be because he's mostly playing, like, you know, super tough guys.
He might also not be getting, like, the best all-time writing in the world when he's in something like Fast and the Furious.
Or, you know, The Last Witch Hunter, for example.
Oh, God.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's certainly true. But I think that, I wish he did more voice acting, because he seems to be really good at it from just these two examples. You know, there's something about him saying Superman having more emotional weight than probably anything Dominic Toretto has said or done over the course of like 8 movies.
We're family.
Yeah, right. Like, I don't know. It's crazy to me. Like, it's crazy how good he is as a voice actor. But I would expect that that's probably not entirely on him, you know.
It'd be fun to change around the lines and put in some lines
from Dominic Toretto,
Fast and the Furious,
into Iron
over
Giant.
The Iron Giant. Yeah. So the Giant's just like, I'm in your face.
Yeah, no, I do actually really.
That'd be great. Hogarth's like, but he was in my face.
I do really love the idea of him flying up to the flying up to intercept the nuke, and it's like, what do you remember about your father? My father had a barbecue, and everyone in the neighborhood was invited. That's really more of a Stallone, but that's not a bad idea. I'm sure that's somewhere out there, and if not, who knows? Maybe someone will make it. One last thing I want to mention that I think is kind of hilarious about this movie is that the scene where the Iron Giant goes up to intercept a nuke that is headed for, a populated area, sacrificing himself to get rid of it, is extremely similar to a scene in Batman v Superman where actual Superman does that, more or less.
Oh my God.
And it is kind of hilarious to me how much more impactful and, you know, again, how much more emotional weight is put on a robot doing this instead of Superman himself doing almost the same thing. Like, yeah. That is kind of hilarious. And
the robot emulating Superman is far more interesting than the actual Superman.
Than Superman himself. And also, like, it is to the point where I trolled through the entire goddamn IMDb trivia for Batman v Superman, and oh boy, don't ever do that, because it's, I mean, IMDb trivia in general is kind of trash, but there is so much in there that is just repeating, like, the same basic information.
There's no editing.
Yeah, and it's, of course not. It's, like, it's really annoying reading, like, 15 times, man, Ben Affleck got really jacked for this movie. It's like, yeah, I know. I've fucking seen it. Like,
it's also a movie.
Yeah, this is not. Yeah, this is not trivia.
Actor
like, this
got
is not
jacked
important.
For superhero movie.
Right. So, you know, that's something. But it said nowhere in there that particular scene was in reference to this. Which, you know, doesn't surprise me, but. I don't know. I thought maybe, just maybe, that cynical ass movie might somehow be making a reference to this, like, heartfelt, earnest film. And it wasn't. And yeah, that doesn't surprise me that much.
Well, I got to agree with you about the naturalistic performances for sure. Especially Eli Marienthal as Hogarth Hughes, the kid.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
He was 13 when he did that, I believe. And he. he nails it. It's so good. Like, it's just like, at first when I, the first moment where I heard him, I was like, oh, this is gonna be one of those 90s kid performances where it's like, oh yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't
right. know. No, I don't I even know how to describe.
Yeah.
There's a certain, like mugging like, that's usually yeah, in kid yeah. performances.
Yeah. And then, no, actually, this is totally natural. Apparently, his performances were videotaped and given to the animators to work with for, like...
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, helping develop, like, expressions and how the characters work. I'm literally reading this off of the Wikipedia page.
Oh, sure, sure. I mean,
I'm sure someone realizes that. I apologize. I just, like, I'm, like, trying to reword it, and it's like, oh, no, what am I doing?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a really interesting detail, though. I love stuff like great. That, frankly.
I know, yeah. I wish everything did that. Like, Akira did that on some level. They did the voice performances first and then animated to match the voice performances.
Yeah, right. That's more common, actually, in Western stuff, for the most part.
Yeah, I believe it.
But you know, the practice of videotaping the actor, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, having the actors do their lines together. It just gives yeah. an extra dimension of reality to it that's really cool. Yeah, that's a neat little detail.
It's something that's usually just not in it, you know, cut out for budget or just
yeah,
not
of course, of
all.
Course. You just
you know,
have
oh, you
the
just
voice.
Get your lines over Skype, you know.
Right. Well, hopefully not quite
maybe
that
not 1999.
yeah, certainly not. Over the phone. Literally phoning it in.
Yeah, yeah.
But no one does that in this. Everyone's really good in it. It's animated super well. It's heartfelt. I was a little irritated while watching it in that my internet started to stutter, so I like had to pause right as the climax was starting and download the whole thing so that I could actually watch it through without it screwing up.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
I think might have robbed me of some of the emotional impact of it.
it stole your tears.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it should be noted, we didn't watch this movie together, partly due to scheduling concerns, and partly because Doak definitely didn't want to cry in front of me on the phone.
Yeah, no, I've realized lately that I have some serious issues with vulnerability, and like
hey,
reading
I'm not
that
good
text
with it
either. Back, I was like, oh shit, yeah, that's a great example right there.
because you're just like, I think we should probably just watch it separately. And I was like, because you're gonna cry, right? Like, and yeah, like
yeah, admittedly, but
I didn't I cry, but I got verklempt. It's very difficult for me to cry for movies. I'm not acting like I'm a badass. I wish I could have.
Yeah, that's a
my girlfriend shed some tears, and I saw that, and I was like, oh yeah, hell yeah.
Yes, I you made
get
you
it
cry.
Too. Yeah, I don't know why. No. It's just like you see that and you're like, yeah, you're touched by this movie too, hell yeah.
Yeah, no, there's something nice about that. Yeah, to be honest, I also thought that you might like to watch it with your girlfriend instead of with me, which is part of the reason that I suggested that, but it
oh,
was also
well,
certainly yeah sure well it was also certainly like scheduling concerns and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
All right, so we should probably get into the recommendations. I think this is going to be pretty obvious, but
yeah,
you know, our recommendation
show
scale.
Fucking show it to your kids.
This yeah, is, it's great. It's a great movie. This is definitely a visit, I would say, for sure. Like,
it should be re-released in theaters.
Oh, man, that would be so awesome. Like,
yeah, it would, actually. That'd be really
sick. I would totally go see that. I should actually
keep damn near
more,
perfect in my eyes.
Yeah, I should really keep more on top of the like special screenings they do out here of stuff like
yeah.
that, because that would be
get, like
incredible.
The Fathom Events stuff.
Yeah, right. I do want to share an anecdote, actually. So I have a pretty distinct memory of seeing this as a kid, and I don't remember what scene it was exactly. I want to say it's the scene where like Hogarth is talking to the giant about a soul and how the giant must have a soul because he could make decisions. And that was honestly for me, probably one of the most emotional moments of watching it this time.
Aww.
And as a kid, I pretty distinctly remember that I went to the bathroom and like came back into the theater around that moment. And then I just spent the rest of the movie, like standing at the back of the theater, because I was like so sad about it.
You're having like an existential moment.
No, just like I don't know, it just like it was touching to me as a kid. Yeah. And I don't remember if I was actually crying or if, like, you know, I'm just assigning judgments to it now. Like, was I trying to avoid my parents seeing me crying about it or yeah. something? But I don't know. Like, that is the memory I have of this movie. And, you know, it lived up to that memory. Like, it's a great movie. Yeah, you should watch it. Sure. It's on Amazon, you know, like most movies are. So check it out.
Yeah. This is, like, undeniably a visit. Like, if you haven't seen this film, go fucking see it. If you have any liking of anything that was on Toonami, you know, anything sci-fi, vaguely interested, or even if you're not into sci-fi, I think you'd get a kick out of this film.
It's yeah, a good I mean, time. Really, if you have any interest in animation, I would say, like, this is a modern movie that you should definitely watch. I would say that it's up there with, like, Mask of the Phantasm and, like, you know, other stuff from the 90s that was really well received, and rightly so. Like, this is a really good movie. We can only say it so many times before it becomes yeah. repetitive. So what we're going to be watching next, well, we're going to be getting back into Batman the Animated Series
for our next main episode,
and for our next minisode we're going to be watching Black Cauldron. We did a little yeah. bit of discussion about watching Quest for Camelot, considering that directly preceded this, but Black Cauldron is also a fairly high profile flop from yeah. around the same time.
Almost tanked the Disney animation company.
Which is insane to me. Yeah. Like, that is bananas. But we will talk about that more next week. Until then, I'm Michael Doak.
And I'm Peter Eby.
And be sure to revisit us next week for Black Cauldron. Thanks for listening. If you want more of our content, follow us over at facebook.com/HBpod and Twitter @HBpod, where we post all of our episodes, as well as additional content related to what we've been watching. Typically, these are in the forms of videos, sometimes articles, you know, that kind of stuff. It's also a great way to get in contact with us, if you're so inclined. Subscribing on iTunes is also a surefire way to stay up to date, and while you're there, consider leaving us a review. See you next week for The Black Cauldron.